EDM board bombs.
Welcome back to another EM Board Bombs podcast. I am hype. Let's go. We got my favorite electric intro music for this podcast episode. We are so ready. We're EM Board Bombs. I am the co-host, co-founder, as you are well aware, of EM Board Bombs. EM Board Bombs, bringing you board and life pearls. We are the Blue Collar Podcast of Emergency Medicine. I don't know who is not amped up for this podcast. If you just listen to that intro and my intro, I mean, come on, let's go. So we're covering amazing amount of information that is board relevant and life relevant. We are so popular now. We are basically like a walking geography quiz. We got people listening everywhere around the world to this podcast. Got an increasing number of followers in India, other countries as well too. The list is too long to name them all. Some of them you probably haven't even heard of. On the map, you couldn't identify where they are, but we are impressed that we have listeners from all across the country, all 50 states, of course, multiple provinces of Canada, including the Yukon Territories. If you don't know where that is, look it up. Geography is one of those little side games of mine, so one of those little nerdy passions. So feel free to check out what the Yukon Territories is. Shout out to them for listening. Dr. Hussein isn't joining me today. Now, I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking. We were just together last week. What happened? Well, unfortunately, he got Giardia. Just kidding. Listen to our last episode. Great episode on Giardia. We did a camping trip together, and no, he did not get malaria or mauled by a bear or attacked by a muskrat, etc. We're all good, all in good shape. He is recovering, though, catching up on a work schedule after having that time off. What a wonderful time for us to get back together again. I want to give a shout out to Emergency Medicine News, one of the sponsors of this podcast, EM News, the voice of emergency medicine. It is the number one publication followed by emergency physicians. It's sent to thousands of emergency doctors throughout the country. If you are an emergency physician, you get a free subscription to Emergency Medicine News. It goes right to your mailbox. You can also look up their articles online. There's no paywall. They're all free. It's incredible. They also have podcasts that we do for them regularly, along with other amazing podcasters and amazing contributors in emergency medicine that are on their website at emnews.com. Fantastic resource. Check it out. They're amazing. Appreciate those of you that have submitted Apple Podcast reviews. How amazing. First of all, if you're not using Apple Podcast, that's totally cool. I get it. Spotify's fine too. I have no allegiance to Apple here when it comes to podcasts. But I will say that when we get an Apple review and it's really good, I have to highlight it. And I must say, the EM Padawan who submitted a podcast review, and you know who you are listening to this podcast, whoever you are out there, thank you for your review. It cracked us up. Check out Apple Podcasts if you want to read that review. Get a big laugh out of it. I'm sure many of you out there have the same sentiments as the EM Padawan who wrote this amazing review. Also appreciate the recent Apple review from September talking about toxic megacolon, the perforating move as the opener and the end move with total perforation. Anyway, love the podcast reviews we're getting. Again, thank you so much for those. Keep them coming. We love it. Every time we write an Apple review or drop a like to this show, we boost in the rankings. So if you like our show, you want to see more of it, you want to see more fun stuff we're going to do, please subscribe. Really appreciate it. Please drop an Apple review. Hey, so we got an awesome stem today, and let's just dive right into it. How about that? Got a 47-year-old male arriving to the ED after an injury while playing football. He states he was playing backyard football. I should say American football, by the way, shouldn't I? For those of you listening in other countries that still think football is not soccer, but there's only one football in my mind, and it's played on Sundays. Anyway, he states he was playing backyard American football on Thanksgiving, and he might have, quote, overdone it. He states he is tired of his uncle and his cousins winning every year. This year, he went all out. He made his family members matching jerseys. He states their team name is, quote, 99 problems, but a stitch ain't one, end quote. You and the nurse in the room have to step outside due to the extreme cringe factor and re-enter the room to examine the patient. The patient endorses right upper chest wall pain. It's vocal. It's pleuritic. He has normal vitals. On chest x-ray, he has a normal appearing set of lungs, normal heart. Everything looks fine. However, he does have a fourth rib fracture on the right. Incentive spirometry is 2,000. Which of the following is the best next step? Choice A, CT chest without contrast. Choice B, observe in the ED for 8 hours and reassess respiratory status. Choice C, discharge home. Choice D, CTA, head and neck. correct answer here is going to be choice C, discharge home. So we're talking about rib fractures today. This patient has just a solitary rib fracture. I shouldn't say just a solitary rib fracture. I've never had a rib fracture. I know some of you listening to this podcast probably have had one. I'm not dismissing the pain associated with these. My father had one recently, unfortunately. Yeah, they're painful, but they rarely require further workup or inpatient management. Given this patient's age, less than 65 years old, he has a normal incentive spirometer value, 2000. He can almost assuredly be discharged home with no need for further ED care. So, great segue here. I recorded some fun rapid bombs all about rib fractures a few months back. These episodes cover high-yield injuries associated with rib fractures, as well as the disposition and care of like flailed chest and other unique injuries to rib fractures. What is EM Rapid Bombs, you would ask? Well, for those of you that are not aware, EM Rapid Bombs is our premium version of EM Board Bombs. What you get with EM Rapid Bombs is so much more than what you're getting with us right now. Now, of course, you get my lovely voice, Dr. Hussein's lovely voice, Dr. Melina Wasiski-Kuhn's lovely voice, a lot of lovely voices, a lot of great banter. But with the Rapid Bombs, you have a streamlined podcast to really surge your knowledge information. What you get are 4 to 6 minute episodes dropped weekly into your in-basket of your podcast app of choice, emails 3 times a week telling you bullet points of what you need to know for quick, rapid recap. We give coaching. The coaching aspect tells you what you're actually going to be asked about on the boards. That's incredible. Nobody else is doing that. First of all, no one else even has a question bank podcast. And thankfully, it's for emergency medicine, right? You're lucky. The second thing is no one has this type of podcast that's producing ongoing episodes. When you subscribe, you buy into the field now. There's over 397 questions or something. We're about to pass 400 episodes, 400 questions right there with coaching, with multiple choice explanations. It's amazing. So check it out, EM Rapid Bombs. You can go to our main website, emboardbombs.com. One click, subscription pathway, easy. You don't even have to get out a credit card. We do Apple Pay. Check it out, emboardbombs.com. All right, let's summarize some key principles of rib fractures. So if you want the real details on rib fractures, subscribe to our premium podcast and we'll set you straight. So here are some key points. Multiple rib fractures, like rib fractures greater or equal to 3 total, they're associated with significant internal injuries. Think about liver or spleen lacerations, mediastinal injury, pneumothorax, hemothorax, flailed chest, pulmonary contusions. These rib fractures are sustained by patients from more serious trauma. If you have more greater than or equal to 3 fractures, the blunt force required to cause those injuries is more significant. Associated injuries are very unlikely to occur with isolated rib fractures, like less than 2 rib fractures, or minor trauma, like a rear end collision, or directed impact to only 1 rib, you know, things like that. Now, what about CT scan here? That was choice A. Let's go into detail here. Now, you shouldn't be doing just random CT chests without contrast for the sole purpose of assessing potential isolated rib fractures. That was choice A. Now, rib fractures are commonly seen on CT studies, often incidentally, you know, in trauma patients, since CT is invaluable for other things. You know, if you work at a trauma center or you're consulting general surgery to help with your trauma patients, whatever, they're going to pan scan, as we call it, many of these patients that are so-called trauma alert. So they come in and they're automatically designed to get the full body scans because they're such at high risk for other injuries, or they're obtunded, or they're intubated, whatever. Yeah, you're going to find some rib fractures probably. However, the walkie-talkie, non-alerted trauma patient doesn't need a CT chest necessarily. If you already have diagnosed 1 or 2 rib fractures in an otherwise healthy appearing trauma patient who has normal vitals and you're thinking about discharging them, yeah, there's no need to perform a CT scan. What about rib radiographs? These are called rib series sometimes. They have very limited utility. I see these ordered occasionally by residents, and they should only be obtained if you have a really high suspicion for multiple rib fractures that are not apparent on chest x-ray and you can't do a CT scan because it's not available. That's the only real indication. They're not that much more specific than a chest x-ray. So if you're really wanting to find rib fractures, and you're like, wow, I'm really worried they could have fractured more than like 3 ribs, get a CT scan. That's just the easier process. It's much more accurate. Just get that. But the test is not going to ask you granular questions like this. So there's really 2 types of patients here when it comes to the boards in real life when it comes to rib fractures. You got the one type which look fantastic. They're walking into the ED. They have normal vitals. They have isolated pleuritic chest pain from their rib fracture. They have less than 2 rib fractures, sometimes less than 3. And they look fantastic. You're going to send them home regardless. You don't need to CT scan them. You don't need to do anything else to them other than give them an incentive spirometer, make sure their pain's controlled with oral medications, send them home. Then you have the other group of patients who have multiple rib fractures, and you know they're at risk for decompensation. They could be frail-looking. They could be older. They have other injuries associated with those rib fractures. Those are the patients you're going to spend more time with. Do better workup. Make sure their pain's controlled. Do incentive spirometry. Debate admitting those patients. And again, more of these details we talked about in Rapid Bombs. So let's briefly review here the management of rib fractures. Patients with severe rib fractures, like greater than five ribs involved, multiple displaced rib fractures, flail chest, whatever, or they're having breathing problems, of course they go to the ICU. Now, there's no universally accepted definition of, quote, severe rib fractures, end quote. I'm sure there's an ICD, you know, 10 code for that, but not in real life, of like an actual definition. However, if you have a high number of fractures, or the fracture is complex, meaning there's comminution, there's displacement, whatever, or they have pulmonary contusions otherwise, or they have COPD, you know, etc., all these things have to be considered. Of course, if they have a pulse ox stat less than 92%, they're tachypneic, etc. All that means they should be admitted, of course. Now, intubating, though, is not first line. Don't just run in there like a cowboy and intubate these patients. You should avoid intubation if they're not having respiratory failure. A trial of non-invasive positive pressure ventilation like BiPAP or CPAP is the best course here in alert patients. This is because putting these patients on the vent has a prolonged course, not a good idea. These patients sometimes do really well with just non-invasive positive pressure ventilation. For people that are just in pain and they don't need respiratory assistance, you're going to really encourage the incentive spirometer, and you're going to send them home on one. Deep breathing, incentive spirometry, coughing, all that reduces secretions and prevents atelectasis and other complications. Don't ever use rib belts or binders, though. I see patients asking me about these. Yeah, those are not in fashion. Those are not the right answer here. Don't do that. Now, rib fractures rarely go to non-union, and not all non-unions require surgery. This is not going to be something that you have to worry about in the vast majority of your patients. The really sick people with bad rib fractures get admitted, and surgery is consulted. They'll take care of it. Surgical fixation can help some of these, but the patients you're sending home are not patients that are going to even be qualifying for this. If you have less than three rib fractures and you're doing well in incentive spirometry, you're not going to get surgery. They're going home. So let's keep that in mind. Last thing here, going over the answer choices here. So choice B said observe in the ED for 8 hours and reassess respiratory status. Not the right answer here, just not helpful. You got a patient with one rib fracture, he looks fantastic, he's going home right away. There's no need to observe this patient, especially because his incentive spirometry is fantastic. If his pain's controlled with oral medications, he can go home. What about choice D, CTA head and neck? Well, CTA head and neck, the reason I put that there is to trigger some people. Sorry about that. The CTA head and neck is used to look for blunt cerebrovascular injury, BCVI as we call it. It's kind of one of those boogeymen in trauma that no one really knows when or when to not image with CTA. Increasingly, we are just being a little more broad with imaging these people because it's just so difficult. They found that previous criteria, the Denver criteria, other things like that, are just not that good for identifying these patients that could have this devastating injury that happens days later. And so CTA head and neck has been used in patients that are at risk for having that BCVI, meaning any type of significant neck fractures and a first or second rib fracture. Those two are risks for BCVI, and therefore that is a criteria for getting a head and neck CTA. So I purposely was kind of triggering some people to think, oh wait, is this the people that I have to do the CTA head and neck on? No. So keep that in mind. First or second rib fractures, those are risks. Think about a CTA head and neck in those people. Anything below that though, no, not so much. Don't do the CTA head and neck just randomly on that person. All right, so let's get serious. The gloves are coming off. We got a great coaching summary here. I'm going to simplify your life forever when it comes to rib fractures. So let's quickly go over this and just put this to rest. I know at each hospital you work at, you might get a different little sprinkling of how rib fractures are managed. Well, let me tell you what you need to know for the boards and a general rubric for real life management of rib fractures in non-alerted trauma patients who are otherwise fine. All right, so if the patient has any of the following, you're just going to go consult trauma surgery and or admit the patient. Greater or equal to three rib fractures, flail chest, bilateral fractures, respiratory compromise, so anything less than 92% on room air, accessory muscle use, tachypnea, etc. If any of those are present, you're admitting the patient. If none of those are present, you can trial oral meds, incentive spirometry, and then get them out of there and get them home. In general, incentive spirometry meaning greater than 1,500 milliliters. And it's really that simple. That's it. That's literally it. If they fail oral meds, they fail the incentive spirometry, then again, you're calling for their admission and you're letting them sort out pretty much upstairs where they need to go, ICU or floor. Great, done, easy. Now you have time to go pick up like 3 extra patients. Go see that headache that's been waiting for a while. Anyway, easy management here, right? Don't make it complex. And that's really about it. So remember to check out our EM Rocket Bombs podcast at emboardbombs.com, essentially. You can check us out on Twitter, all the social medias, all of them. Anyway, thanks for listening. I hope you have a lovely Thanksgiving if you're listening to this before Thanksgiving. If you're listening to this afterward, check your salt levels and make sure to not work the weekend after Thanksgiving like I'm going to do. So wish me luck, Godspeed. It's going to be a pretty awful experience when you have the after Thanksgiving dining crowd come in, all the heart failure patients. Yes, we all know how that is in the emergency department. However, it's a pleasure, and we'll see you next time. Hopefully Iltifat or Marlena will be with me. Always kind of awkward doing these alone. Got to make up jokes, got to laugh alone. Anyway, been a pleasure. See you next time. Stay frosty.